Deer Plugged In. You in on this? Toyota's versatile SUVs roll up their sleeves and take on tough jobs, dress up for a night out, or haul your family and friends with their spacious interiors. And they're available with some real sweet tech. Want a hybrid SUV? Oh yeah, they got those too. All with a slew of standard features so you won't break the bank. Get the juice at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, rugby fans. Welcome to episode 181 of the DNVR Rugby Podcast. My name is Colton Strickler. I'm your host. Good show for everybody today. Looking forward to jumping into it. Got a good interview coming up. But before we get to that, we'll go ahead and start the show the same way we do every week. That's by jumping into the breakdown. The breakdown is presented by First Bank. First Bank is the official banking partner of Infinity Park. They believe in banking for good, doing their best to do right by their customers, communities, and employees. Banking for good, member FDIC. Of course, we're going to start talking about the American Raptors, and we'll pick up on how the match went last week. So, Raptors wrapped up their home portion of their 2023 Super Rugby America season on Sunday. The heartbreaking 44-37 loss to Jacare. It was a tough one to swallow because the Raptors jumped out to a dream start, in large part of because of the play of Ramiro Moyano, which really came at the perfect time because if you listen to last week's show, you heard how much Detuan, you know, liked watching him play, and he talked about how easy he made it look, and we got to see that on full display. So it was pretty cool. Like I said, jumped out to a 19-3 lead before the 15-minute mark on tries from Sean Clark, Watson, Fliki Tonga. Those were both assisted by Ramiro, and then Ramiro took one in himself on a pass from Ryan James. So really about the best start you could ask for. We're in full control of the match, but just like the week before, things kind of unravel as the first half goes along and then the second half starts. So it's been a trend these last 2 weeks. The Raptors will allow a try right before halftime. The other team then turns that try into more points on the other side of the half, kind of riding that momentum. And it takes them a good, 15, 20 minutes to wake up before they finally do. And kind of steady the ship, but it's too little too late at that point. They almost got away with it this week. Ryan James scored a try later in the second half that got them to within three, and then they turned a penalty into a penalty goal, knotted things up at 37, but Jacare went right down the field right at the end of the game. Kick to touch, through line out to a mall, rolled right in. That's what they'd been doing all day. So once they kind of got it down in that area and there was a penalty, you kind of wondered if that was going to happen again. And it did, and that's how they won the game. So tough way to lose, especially after such a good start, but that's how it goes. And, they're still figuring out how to close the door, seal the deal, and that's just going to take time. You're going to have to take a couple losses on the chin like this before you figure it out, and that's unfortunately the case here. So we'll talk more about kind of the breakdown of the homestand here coming up soon. But they'll close the season with two matches in South America against Dogos and Cobras Brazil. They're out of bye this week, so that's how the league's kind of scheduled it. As any team that travels up here is on a bye. When the Raptors go back down to South America, they're on a bye also. So like I said, close out with two matches, one against Dagos on May 21st, and then Cobras Brazil on the 27th. The time of the Dagos match has changed. I think it went back 2 hours, so it is now scheduled for 4 p.m. Mountain Time. And remember to join us for a watch party at Maria Empanada on Broadway. That's where we'll all be. And, you know, I had lunch there yesterday. It was delicious, so make sure you come on down, eat some good food, watch your rugby, and hopefully it's a fun environment. It's an Argentinian restaurant. They're playing a team from Argentina, so we're looking to capitalize on that. Should be a good time. And there's another little piece of Raptors news that I will talk about in required reading, so stick around for that. But before we get to that, we got to get through all the rugby you can watch this weekend, and all the rugby you can watch this weekend is brought to you by Wintergreen. Wintergreen loves rugby, wants to support USA Rugby's mission of uniting an inclusive, passionate rugby community to grow the sport of rugby in America. Wintergreen gels, creams, sprays, and soaks are made with wintergreen oil and other therapeutic natural oils that help soothe and support sore muscles and joints to keep you at your best. Visit wintergreensport.com to purchase the products you need to help you prepare to win. Obviously, no Raptors match this weekend, so you got to buy. You can watch all this other rugby. Starting with Major League Rugby, we've got Rugby ATL at the Toronto Arrows Friday at 5 p.m. Utah Warriors at Dallas Jackals on Saturday at 4 p.m. San Diego Legion at NOLA Gold Saturday at 6 p.m. Seattle Seawolves at Houston Sabercats Saturday at 6 p.m. New England Free Jacks at Old Glory DC on Sunday at 11:30 a.m. And then the New York Ironworkers versus Chicago Hounds on Sunday at noon. All those matches this weekend are on the Rugby Network, so that's where you'll keep it locked. We got the Toulouse Sevens, USA Men in Action against Fiji on Friday at 6:57 a.m., against France on Friday at 12:35 p.m., and then South Africa on Saturday at 5:49 a.m. And the USA Women are in action against Canada on Friday at 2:44 a.m., New Zealand on Friday at 8:36 a.m., and then Poland Saturday at 1:49 a.m. So make sure you tune into some Sevens. Get the URC semifinals. We get Super Rugby all weekend on Flow Rugby, Premiership semifinals on Peacock, Allianz Premier 15s on premier15s.com. There's plenty of other rugby too, so make sure you tune in, check that out. It's going to be a rainy weekend around Denver, so if you're local, that's what you should be doing, watching TV. Let's move to jump on the interview portion of the show. This interview with Rich Cortez is brought to you by O'Neill's. O'Neill's is the official sportswear supplier to the biggest teams in world rugby, Infinity Park, and the American Raptors. Shop apparel now at O'Neill's.com. It's O-N-E-I-L-L-S.com. So, got to know Rich Cortez a little bit over the course of the Super Rugby America season as he served as the match day commissioner for the league for every American Raptors home match. And, you know, after talking to him, you kind of realized that this is somebody you need to interview. But aside from that responsibility, he's been very involved in collegiate rugby over the course of his life, several different capacities, served as coach at Wyoming, played at Stanford, and now he is the chairman of American Collegiate Rugby and the chairman of the Rocky Mountain Rugby Union as well. So super involved in collegiate rugby at all levels. And then on the Super Rugby Americas level as the match day commissioner, he's talked a lot about what that is, what that role consists of. On top of that, he has also served as the associate athletic director at Northwestern. He's had quite the life. So excited for everybody to listen to this conversation with Rich Cortez. All right, pleased to be joined on the show by a special guest. We have Rich Cortez, former coach, referee, chairman of American College Rugby, and chairman of Rocky Mountain Rugby Union. Rich, how's it going, man?
Very well, thank you, even though it's cloudy outside.
I know, we get some weird weather these next couple of days. Well, I'm happy to have you on, Rich. You're an interesting fella. It's been a pleasure getting to know you over the last few weeks. So I'm looking forward to kind of introducing you to the broader audience. And, Rich, the first question we ask everybody that comes on the show, just can you tell us a little bit about where you're from?
Well, interesting history. I grew up in Wyoming. I went to school in the Bay Area in California. Graduated law school and business school from Stanford. Worked in the Bay Area for a couple of years, and then I got a job offer to be associate athletic director at Northwestern University when they were trying to resurrect their athletic program. So I went there and was there for 6 years, then relocated back to California, did expert testimony for litigation. And then when my father passed away and my mother was diagnosed with dementia, I moved back to Wyoming and made a promise to take care of her. So I stayed there for 17 years and started coaching. I coached rugby at Stanford and Northwestern, Stanford again. And then I was grabbed by a couple boys in the grocery store in Laramie, Wyoming, with a rugby shirt on. And they asked if I knew anything about it. I said, kind of. And so they put me on a 2-week trial run. And for 17 years, I was on that 2-week trial run.
Yeah. That sounds great. That's a, that's an awesome story. So I have some questions about your athletic director career, because that's an interesting profession to me. What is that? What's like the day to day of that entail when you're at Northwestern?
Oh gosh, it was a multifaceted effort because Northwestern hadn't won a football game in 5 years. I take that back. They were 151-1 when we got there. Their basketball program was ranked last in Division I in terms of overall winning percentage over a couple decades. The facilities were crumbling, but it was a very good school and with very good people. And the emphasis was, and what we tried to convince the administration is that if you're going to be a highly respected institution, you have to commit yourself to do everything well. Mm-hmm. Get out of those areas that you can't do well or that you don't care about and focus on what we called selective excellence. And if we're going to do it, let's do it the best we can. And so we undertook a fundraising campaign with Doug Single, who was the athletic director. He was only 29. I was 29, by far the youngest university athletic administrators, I think, in the country at the time. And we started a fundraising campaign. We felt that the experts felt that we could raise probably about $9 million. But over the course of the over the course of the campaign, the final amount was well into the $30 million range.
Wow.
And because there are a lot of people that support their programs, and that's the deal with colleges. They're very supportive of their own programs, much like rugby. College rugby is fantastic. But the people that most care about your program are your alumni, your families, and your friends. So I think that focus has to be reiterated because there's always a lot of talk about the valuable marketing of college rugby. It's an exciting sport, and it's a great sport, and can teach very very good lifelong lessons. But the people that care most about it are the people that are playing it, coaching it, came from the school, or played rugby before for that school.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm looking forward to asking you more about American college rugby here in a minute. But I want to back it up a little bit. You touched on it a little bit earlier, but how did you get into rugby just in general?
Oh, I was part of the top 12 on the golf team, which means I got to play a little bit, but not a lot of the matches. At Stanford, we didn't have scholarships at that time. So we were dared to come out for rugby by the roommate of one of the players who was playing rugby. Mm-hmm. And a couple of us took up the dare and found out that the body weight for golf might be a certain size, but the body weight for rugby tailed a little bit more mass. So we struggled that first year, but we hung with it and we enjoyed it and kept going. So it was on a dare. So yeah. I played one extreme to the other, golf and rugby.
That's what I'm saying. I spend a lot of time around crossover athletes at this job, you know, with the direction the American Raptors have gone. I have not heard of anyone making the jump from golf to rugby. That's a new one to me.
Well, yeah, it may speak to my sanity or intelligence or both.
What position did you play?
I played hook.
Okay.
Played hooker. Yeah. And quickly learned that I had to put on about 25 pounds from the first year to the second year. And I did. It was the most enjoyable thing ever. And then I got to play for a team called the Bay Area Touring Side, which through the course of its history, won over 85% of their games.
Wow.
And toured internationally and were founded under the most wonderful premise. Tragic in a way, in that the Olympic Club had a discrimination clause, and the founders of the bats came from the Olympic Club, and they broke away because they wanted to play with their friends who would not be admitted into the Olympic Club. And through the course of their history, even when times changed, they started losing members. Excuse me. The administrators were aging out. They decided to try to merge again with the Olympic Club.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some players that were told they would not be admitted to the Olympic Club. So we started, I should say it, because it was going before I joined, the Bay Area, the Bats, started because of discrimination, and they decided to fold because of that same discrimination. I think those members should take great pride in that they weren't going to sacrifice their ideals.
That's super interesting. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah. I have on my wall right here over my desk, Bay Area Touring Side, Paris, San Francisco, because it was founded in a hotel room in Paris in 1967.
Mm.
And they folded, as I said, because of the failure to merge in 2011.
Wow.
Wow. That's a good run.
Yeah, that is a good run. That's super interesting. I never heard of that before. I'm going to have to look into that a little bit more.
Yeah. There's a 45-minute film that's made about the bat.
Perfect. I'll look it up because we have a little segment on the show where it's usually called Required Reading, but sometimes we give the people a little less homework, give them something to watch. That might be what we throw in there this week. So that'll be interesting to check out. Perfect. And then I know now you've already talked about how passionate about college sports you are, obviously taking athletic director position and then, helping out with the American College Rugby. Can you kind of just talk about how you became involved with that and what does that kind of look like for you, the day to day now?
Excuse me. My voice is a little,
you're good.
Shaky this morning. American College Rugby came into being because of the bankruptcy of, USA Rugby. Interestingly enough, the community groups, youth, college, and club, were never over budget, but because of the failure to monitor the spending for the national teams, the national governing body was driven into bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
They've emerged, but as such, they've essentially abdicated all responsibility for the competitive club members. So some groups had to be formed to take care of those. The unions, it was pretty easy because they had always been kind of a self-governing type structure, even though the national championships were conducted by USA Rugby.
Mm-hmm.
The colleges used to be under the unions, and then they broke away under the several ideas or premises that the colleges were not getting their fair share from the unions. And in some cases that was true, but also because they felt that the marketability of the colleges was far above any senior clubs. And so they broke into conferences that mimicked kind of the varsity programs. So you had your Southeastern, you had your PAC, you had your Mid-America, and other similar conferences in the Atlantic Coast Conference. The difficulty with that is that as a non-varsity sport, you didn't own the rights to use those names, although that didn't become an overwhelming impediment. But then the marketability and the commercialization of those conferences was in rugby was really non-existent.
Yeah.
So that was a difficulty. And further, you'd have Division One and Two and Three women, Division One, Two, Three men, and so it was just scattered.
Mm-hmm.
So with the bankruptcy, we formed American College Rugby, which is club rugby for Division One, Two, and Three men for those teams that played in the spring. Now, seasonality has always been an issue because the East Coast, they have to play in the fall.
Right.
Because of the weather, it's just the upper East Coast, I should say. It's really difficult to try to play 15s in the spring. And then with the advent of the sevens and the popularity of sevens, the school year is just jam-packed, almost overpacked.
Yeah.
So we stuck with the teams and just moved them over from USA Rugby for all those teams that played their championships in the spring. Of course, COVID really dealt everybody a blow. So we're still trying to revive some of those conferences and teams. But we will.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, National Collegiate Rugby formed out of the old National Small College Rugby Organization and have not maintained their membership with USA Rugby. American College Rugby has College Rugby Association of America, which has the women's teams and D1A,
mm-hmm.
and a couple D1AA teams. There are strong incentives to try to merge.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a little while, I think, because of the, shall we say, the built-in reluctance for either party to change their name.
For sure.
And it may seem fundamentally minor, but it also speaks to in any situation, company, sports institution, you've got to have trust. And once we can develop that trust, then we'll be in a better place.
That just takes time, right? That's kind of what it boils down to.
Yeah, it takes time.
Yeah.
Yeah, college, you know, the college has tried to redo stuff every few years. It's just kind of nature of the beast. So I think things will settle out. We'll keep working towards unification. We are still members of USA Rugby. We know that USA Rugby has their shortcomings.
Mm-hmm.
We are not pleased, to be honest, with their performance. But we're also understanding that we need some, we need to respect World Rugby's structure.
For sure.
And we are doing that. And we'll try to work on the issues with USA Rugby and amongst ourselves, knowing that if you build anything, you don't get out every single dollar you put in. Mm-hmm. You don't build a school that way, a highway, anything of value. And if you're selfish such that you only will pay dues if you get every single penny back, then you've got myopia.
You can't do anything then. Yeah.
That's right.
Why bother doing anything? That's not how it's gonna work. That's super interesting though, because I know, like, I'm sure that you hear this quite often too, but like even me, I've been, you know, involved in rugby for a while, and college rugby still scrambles my brain. It's hard to keep track of things. So I think you did a good job kind of explaining, you know, why things are the way they are right there.
I think the big mistake of USA Rugby was not having a small college and D3 and small college competition, because they were dues members. Mm-hmm. They were dues members too, and they didn't have championships. And that was fundamentally unfair.
Yeah.
And I proposed it, but it was shot down when I first became college director.
Yeah. Yeah, that does seem unfair. That sucks. You got to pay the same price as everyone else and then not get a, you know, play for something at the end. That's why you
that's
do
right.
it.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Of course.
So that's interesting, though, Rich. I thank you for breaking that down for us. And I wanted to ask you again, kind of pivot a little bit. I've obviously gotten to know you as the match day commissioner for the Super Rugby Americas matches here at Infinity Park. And I think this is an interesting position. Like, this is something I'd never heard of. So I got a bunch of questions about that.
Okay.
So how did that opportunity to take that position come about?
Actually, Mark Bullock called me and asked me if I'd be interested.
And
I was, for several reasons. One, it's an international competition, and in and of itself would be kind of very interesting, and it proved to be very interesting. Two, it would bring some focus to the Rocky Mountain region.
Yeah.
And three, it even though I'm it had an interesting start. Because of the history of the American Raptors, or the Raptors previously belonging to the MLR and getting out of that. I see where Glendale was coming from. They're trying to raise the level of things. They're trying to bring quality athletes into the stream where we can improve on all levels.
Mm-hmm.
But the uniqueness of Super Rugby Americas was the ability to attract people of all nations that are living here that found it interesting. So a lot of people were coming to those games that were not rugby fans. They would just kind of see their compatriots from their homelands, even though their homeland now is the USA. So I think in these times of utter and despicable rancor among people,
mm-hmm.
that this was a good thing to showcase that people of all nations are fundamentally good people, without overselling it. It's just a step to bring enthusiasm back.
Right.
In some form. And so that's why I was interested in it. Also because there will be opportunities for American players if they commit to get ready for it, to prepare for it, that will happen. Mm-hmm. It won't be an all South American populated rosters.
Yeah.
And it'll give opportunities for administrators like myself and or referees and match official personnel a chance to raise the level of their games too.
Definitely.
And so I think there's just nothing but upside for that.
For sure. And that was going to be one of my last questions, but I'll just ask it now. Like, you've obviously watched a lot of rugby. I worked in the MLR for a little bit, so I've seen a little bit, you know. But what did you think about the quality of play that you saw so far? Because to me, I always say, like, it's been fun to ask some of the guys on this team that have MLR experience, like, what the difference is, because it just looks so much faster to me. And I was kind of wondering what you thought about that.
Well, I think as the matches went on, there was improvement, certainly in the American Raptors side. But also, it's really hard to play high level rugby. It's really hard to referee it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to prepare for it. But the only way you can get yourself tested is by playing these matches. I think the improvement is there. It's coming, I should say. It's not there yet.
Yeah.
In terms of any coach, he would look at it. It's you got to be in position. Well, you got to be fit. You got to be ready. You got to be thinking. You got to be in position. You got to play at a low body height. And you've got to have absolutely strong technique. Because you can't have good skills if you don't have good technique. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of work to be done. And then you have to put it in the teamwork and come up with a game plan. So I, from a coaching perspective, I saw a lot of areas that need improvement. But I also saw, as you say, the game is being played faster mm-hmm. these days. And so it's going to take 10,000 hours, right, to become proficient at something.
Yeah.
It's going to take a million hours combined to get where we want to be. But the joy is in trying.
Definitely. That's right. Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, a million hours with everybody on the field. I didn't think of that. So going back to your match day commissioner's responsibilities, what does that look like for you? I know I asked you this a couple of weeks ago, and I thought this was a good answer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like game day responsibility. What time you get in there? What is everything you have to do? Just please tell us all about that.
Well, the captain's run, first of all, it's not just a one-man job. The facility staff and the promotional staff and everybody at Glendale were working very, very hard on preparing the field, creating the timesheet for the television and for the teams. On the captain's runs, you got to make sure that they understand and review the World Rugby Trial Laws, that they know where they're going, and also review that, make sure that they get their match rosters in, and that if there are any changes, you have to keep track of, and we have to get signatures and all the stuff, and then we have to load it online through the Super Rugby America's registration system. Which we had a few issues with, but we started to learn how to handle it. We didn't get a lot of training. We got some overview, but trial and error.
Baptism by fire.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah,
you know,
best way to learn.
Okay. You just got to stay calm, because everybody's going to make mistakes, and we made our share, but we really, really improved as the season went on. And then, you know, during the match day, everything is geared to the television broadcast. But the teams, backing up a little bit, they have to know where the head injury assessment room is, where the doping control, because we're part of the World Anti-Doping Agency program. You also have to know, in case of emergency, where to go, who's there. We had... you need a match day doctor and a head injury assessment doctor, but we had several other doctors. Our doctors were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Moats, Dr. Grossman, Dr. Chang, and Dr. Russick. Then the bane of our existence was the new water carrier rule, thanks to a South African playing shenanigans on trying coaching through their water carriers, and this was a World Rugby Trial Law, and people are getting the hang of it. You know, it's a good lesson in, you can complain about it, but you can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So why waste your time complaining about it?
Right.
Move on to something you can have some influence, like not knocking it on at the try line.
Yeah, control what you can control.
Yeah, it's easy to be a critic from my vantage point, because I didn't step onto the field.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and then we have post game reports for yellow cards or any red cards, and the referees have to fill out the reports. The match scorers have to compare notes to make sure everything was accurate, and then we have to put it in the system and try to close it within 2 hours afterwards. and then you're done, and then you start working on the next week.
Yeah. You get a couple minutes of rest, and then you get back to it. So what did you...
2.6 seconds of rest, and you're good.
What did you tell me the other week that the perfect game for you would be a 0-0 draw, no penalties, they pretty much just line up, tackle each other a few times, and then leave?
Yeah, that would be good, except I'm sure we'd probably have to file a report for explaining why there weren't any penalties.
Oh, okay.
No yellow cards, no red cards, no scoring, no issues. Because definitely if that happened, something was clearly wrong.
Yeah, no kidding. It seemed like, I don't even know if you can comment on this, but it seemed like there was a lot more, there's a lot of cards in this competition. Did you kind of get that feeling? You were obviously doing a lot of the paperwork
Well, I think, first of all, I think there are a lot of young referees, very good referees, but young referees. And then you have a multilingual, because most of the teams and players spoke Spanish, there's always the dialect. So any referee out there that's trying to manage this stuff may not be able to communicate as clearly.
Right.
And so the only way to do it from time to time is the cards. But I also think the cards were a result of the players totally committing to playing hard.
Yeah.
And you do that, you're going to make mistakes.
Right.
So I think we'll see market improvement next year.
I was always just kind of under the impression that everything was so new. Like, it was a lot of, especially for the Raptors, right? It's new competition. It's a relatively new team playing against a team of a bunch of teams that aren't new. You know, they've been playing together for a while. New referee, you know, new officiating. That's always what I kind of chalked it up to. But that's interesting to hear what you're saying as well.
And it's just the nature of anything new. You're not going to know everything going in.
For sure.
You're not going to know how to react, et cetera, but they'll have some under the belt. Now the caution they have to guard against is, or the problems we have to watch out for. Next year you're going to have probably a slightly different group.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully much of the same group. You're going to have how do you integrate those people into as quickly as you can?
Yeah.
But this, the beauty of it is you've got a long time to go. They have six games in the first round. They had six games here. Now they're going down to play four more or something like that.
Yeah.
So
four, six, and then they finish up with two more.
Oh, okay. 4-6. So it's just two rounds.
Yeah.
So that's a good start.
For sure.
Because the professional rugby players have to learn how to take care of their bodies. And if you're going to commit to winning the championship, which all the teams, that's their goal, I'm sure. That's a long season.
Yeah.
For a lot of these guys, maybe not for the Commonwealth nations, because they play, you know, lots and lots and lots of games. But for the South Americans, the reason Argentina got better because they were playing a lot more games.
Yeah. Right, that's the goal.
And they develop, and when you're playing more games, there are more opportunities for those coming up, and the youth see it, and that's what they want to do. That's great.
Yeah, definitely. And then is the match day commissioner, is this something that exists in like every professional rugby competition?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not like a new standard thing. For me, it's something I had never heard of, and that's interesting to hear.
Yeah, in fact, we even haven't had it in the college championships.
Okay,
and it's all match day issues. So if there's something happening, it comes down to the match commissioner to make a decision.
Makes sense. That's a lot of pressure then.
Oh yeah, could be. If you have it, it's not for the tentative. But you can be stupid and still do it. I mean, look at me.
No, Rich. No. You're not stupid. But that's awesome. So I know you said you don't have any responsibilities now that there's no more matches in Infinity Park. So what are you turning your attention to now? I know you mentioned earlier you get a lot of a lot of irons in the fire with the American Rugby, or excuse me, ACR.
Yeah, yeah. So we had our championship in Boulder on last Saturday. So that was won by the University of San Diego over Iowa State University on the world's best, one of the world's best rugby pitches.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic, the view of the mountains. Now we're headed to San Jose a week from Saturday for the sevens. We'll have 10 teams, D1 teams for the sevens in San Jose. And that's going to be a competition focused. It's not a lot of bells and whistles.
Uh-huh.
It's all going to be decided on the field. As we grow, we're certainly be looking at either partnering or moving it to a different location that better suits our competition, because we hope to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be meeting right after that to set the dates and locations. And we have contacted, actually the Rugby Network contacted us, but we had been last year before, or 2 years ago before COVID got in, we had already started talking to them, but then, you know, we really had disruption.
Everything changed.
Yeah. So we hope to be on the Rugby Network next year.
Nice.
And we actually will be. We're going to buy some cameras, so that we'll have a 2 or 3 camera set up for our championships. And the focus of American College Rugby, it's, we don't have paid coaches, except, you know, if the alumni are helping.
Right.
We don't have a paid administrative staff. We're moving the money into where it's best used, and that's for the players and coaches, and to make their experience as good as they can.
Yeah. That's awesome. And when did you say the sevens tournament was? Sevens championship?
May 20th and 21st.
Perfect. That's coming up quick then.
Yeah. Never a rest for them.
Yeah. So it sounds like you had a busy weekend last weekend, and then, yeah, you get a little break and you're back into it. So.
Yeah. Well, it keeps the old man out, you know.
Whatever works then.
Yeah.
Perfect, Rich. That's all the questions I had for you. Thanks so much for your time. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks, Colton. Anytime.
All right. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that conversation with Rich Cortez. I know I certainly did. Thanks to Rich for taking the time to chat with me. Looking forward to having him back on in person. I think it would be a good show as well. A lot to cover. He's a very knowledgeable guy about the rugby scene. So looking forward to having him back on, and hopefully everybody enjoyed that. Let's go ahead and jump into the required reading portion of the show now. Required reading is brought to you by Maria Empanada. Maria Empanada is Denver's home for rugby lovers. Their 3 convenient locations on South Broadway, Stanley Marketplace, and Riverview make it easy to pick up delicious empanadas on the way home from Rugby Town USA. Visit MariaEmpanada.com to order yours today. This piece is USA Men's Eagles ready for New Horizon as 2023 player pool is announced. This was put out by USA Rugby today on Thursday. The reason I'm including this in here is because 2 American Raptors made the cut. So Line Latu and Aki Pulu made the camp. Will compete for spots on the August tour that will include stops in Romania, Portugal, and Georgia, the country, not Georgia, the state. And it's cool because this is what the American Raptors program was designed to do. So it's awesome to see 2 guys get a shot. Line, I've talked about him at length on the show. Wrote a long profile on him on thednvr.com. He is the prototype for this program. Someone that had some rugby experience, goes to play college football, is looking for a way to get back into it, play high-level rugby, and here he is. Now he's, you know, on the verge of making the Eagles. And then Aki Pulu, a good high school football player, had played some rugby growing up as well, but he's just 19 years old. So he graduated high school literally a year ago, and again, knocking on the door, making the Eagles. So this is what this program is designed for. I can only imagine more and more people will you know, get selected and get looks because of what this program is doing. So it's cool to see it work like that, you know, because I'm sure 3 years ago, Line Latu wouldn't even have dreamed about playing on the Eagles. 3 years ago, Aki Pulu was just getting his driver's license. So it's pretty cool to see how this all works out. So I will link this article in the article that houses this podcast, as well as the description of this podcast. We'll make it nice and easy for you. Just scroll down, click it, check it out yourself, see a bunch of other people. Luke White, friend of the program, we talked about him last week. He also made the camp. So it's cool to see kind of the direction they're going. They're giving a lot of new blood a try, which is necessary, obviously, given everything that happened. And hopefully it pays dividends. Let's go ahead and talk about Stat of the Week now. Stat of the Week is presented by Catapult. Catapult's committed to making performance technology available to athletes at all levels. Whether it's the biggest teams and organizations in world sport or amateur rugby players, Catapult helps monitor performance like the pros. For more information, visit catapultsports.com. So let's take a look at some numbers from the American Raptors' six-match homestand. So obviously only generated one win, which stinks, but there's a lot more to it than that. So they scored 24 tries by 13 different players, generated one penalty try as well. Over the six matches, they scored 164 points, conceded 259. So when you compare that to the 48 points that they scored and 125 points that they conceded on the road earlier this season in a four-match, you know, road trip, that's some tangible progress on the offensive side. Kind of like stayed the same, maybe regressed a little bit on the defensive side. Just in terms of average points per match, but that stinker of a match against Pampas really throws off the averages, so it's kind of hard to, you know, calculate stuff off of that. So, but that's progress. Is that where they want to be? No, but it is progress, and you got to take progress when you can find it. In terms of try scores, Daytuan Sheridan leads the way with four tries on the year. Diego Fortuny and Watson Filiki-Tonga both have three. Tommy Clark, Ethan McVeigh, Line Latu, and Sean Clark all scored two to this point, and they've also scored two penalty tries as a whole. They got two more matches. We'll see how these numbers shift. Would be surprised if Daytuan's on the trip. Learned he was pretty injured after I talked to him last week, so hopefully he gets better, takes care of himself. But, you know, Diego, Watson, anybody, you know, can have a big game, catch up to him. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. Hopefully they can finish the season strong, pick up a win or two. That would be ideal. Let's go ahead and close the show with The Loop, presented by PhysioPro. PhysioPro is an official partner of the American Raptors. Visit physio-pro.com for more information. So make sure you follow along with everything we got going on at DNVR Rugby on Twitter at DNVR_rugby. Like I mentioned earlier in the show and last week too, we've got two watch parties coming up. So watch the Raptors play Dagos on May 21st at 4 p.m. Was 2 p.m., now it's 4 p.m. at Maria Empanada on Broadway. And then close the season out with us at the DNVR Bar on May 27th to watch the Raptors play Cobras Brazil. So it'll be fun. Be the best way to close out the season, I think. Hopefully we can still, you know, get some of the community together, watch the Raptors finish it out. And I'll be looking forward to it. So that does it for the show today. Thank you to everybody for listening. Hopefully you have a good week. Hope you have a great weekend. Catch you all back here next Friday.